I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Nightside. This is the Nightside Project.
Look at the size of that boy's head. I'm not kidding. It's like an orange on a toothpick.
Nightside on KSL.
A limited edition summer season.
It's summer now. They told me this would be temporary.
It cannot end soon enough.
The Nightside Project with Ethan Millard and Alex Carey. Streaming live on Alexa and on KSL News Radio at 102.7 FM.
Welcome to the Nightside Project. I'm Ethan Millard here with Alex Carey. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Another episode.
When did we actually go on last year in relief of COVID?
I feel like it was right about this time.
Now is when we had to start figuring it out. But
no, it was. I think it was April.
April 10th or something. Anyway.
Yeah, it was April because we went into July. It was 4 months total, I think.
Don't you love how everything is like we're celebrating these dumb anniversaries? I thought about it the other day, and I'm like, these are dumb anniversaries. I don't want to. You don't celebrate anniversaries of like the worst relationship you've ever had, and that's over.
You know what,
right?
Though, but you might celebrate
what
you might.
Perspective or what? I don't like that. And I'm like, we did the year from when Rudy Gobert was got COVID, and then it kind of started everything up, and we tripped over ourselves here at KSL to tell that story. And I was like, I felt weird playing them all that day because a lot of it went down on Scott and my show that night. And I was like, this feels weird. And then we celebrated, this was the worst one. We celebrated a year anniversary. We're celebrating a year anniversary of that stupid earthquake coming up. Like,
oh,
what,
yeah.
Are we going to celebrate that? I don't want to celebrate. It was terrifying. I put a gun under the seat of my car. Did I tell you that?
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. That day I was freaked out, man. I put a gun under the seat of my car. I put our 72-hour kits in the car, and I was like, I assumed everything was canceled, man. I assumed life was canceled. I was like,
all bets are off.
I'm going to have to shoot some people on the way down to Parowan on our secret ranch down there.
Oh, I see. I was going to say, where would you go? Because here's
we got a secret ranch or Parowan.
Okay, so here's
or Paragona. You don't know which one.
Here's the thing, is if I were to do that, put a gun in the car, 72-hour kits in the car, I would just be leaving to drive around with a gun and 72-hour kits in the car.
That's why you got to give the gun.
I may as well stay
home. You got to give the gun to one of the kids. That's what I did. You got to give a gun to one of the kids, have the window rolled down, and just, if you're going to be serious about it, that's the year of celebrating, the year of me taking the gun back out of the car and going, okay, fine. This time I'm safe, but next time I'll be ready for you. But anyway, so I'm just saying celebrating these years have been kind of weird. But
we got to do something.
Okay, I got two things to talk about with you today, buddy.
Let's hear it.
You ready?
Yep, lay it on me.
Traffic related deaths are up, and this whole thing about UDOT rolled out this whole thing. Utah Department of Transportation. I think it's like this in a lot of other states. People are driving pretty recklessly. There are more people. There are fewer people on the roads. Feet are being pushed down to the floorboard more. They've had more people over 100 miles an hour for tickets than they've ever had in a year stretch. Why are people such bad drivers during the pandemic?
I don't think we're bad drivers.
Yeah, they are. Actually have more fatalities this year.
I don't know. You know what I think it is? I think people are stressed out. Tons of anxiety, and I think that just it affects your performance, right?
You start swerving.
You got other things on your mind. Mm. You got other things on your mind. You're like, and you're driving. Yeah. And it's not like you're on your cell phone or anything, but you just, in your mind's on its cell phone with itself, trying to figure some things out. And so all of a sudden, traffic piles up. All of a sudden, all you see is brake lights, bam. And I think that's what it is. I think it's just general anxiety and just people have other things on their mind. It's made us, It's made us unreliable on the road. I'm not going to say we're bad drivers okay. because I always feel like Utahns are good drivers. I think people are stupid about that. But I will say I think we've been anxious drivers. I think we've been distracted drivers, mentally distracted.
So I wanted to bring something else up, too, because I saw it today and I thought – I really just picked stuff that I think we would have talked about on the old Nightside Project, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of sure. that's kind of the this is sort of my way of picking things out. So I saw this story about how in Spain they are rolling out you see this? They're rolling out a practice like a dry run on the 4-day work week in the country.
Really?
Yes. And I thought, you know what? You don't need you're aiming too low here. Europe, first of all, not a lot of things. Europe is they have the bar set low for hours to work during the week, but they're just launching period. This trial of this 4-day work week. And I thought, listen, we already kind of figured out that we can do that. Don't you don't go for a 4-day work week. Go for 3 days at the office and 2 days at home. Wink. You know what I mean?
Oh, I see.
You see what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you don't need
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah,
I don't. Look, don't. We
kind of like how your kids are at school from home on Friday. Wink. Oh, yeah, Friday's a school day.
That's the funniest thing is, like, I'm honestly, my kids are like, as soon as Thursday hits, my kids are like, where are we going for the weekend? I'm like, I don't know, but leave your book bags behind. They're way too much in the car. Like, get out of here. Save room for the guns we got to take. But I'm seriously like, the Spain experimenting with a 4-day work week, we already know what the answer is. That's like saying, oh, Ethan and Alex experiment with pepperoni pizza to see if it's any good. Like, we know what the result is going to be. This thing is, we know what it's going to – now, it didn't work in Utah, right? Why didn't the 4-day work week work in Utah? Because we still rang 40-plus hours out of these people where it was like – the real question
is – it was 410s. Are you talking about the state of Utah, the state
yes,
of employees?
Yes, when we tried it here, yeah, 410s. It was 410s. And so we're basically telling people just work these you know, reward yourself with a Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. But during the week, remember they were like they were seeing if they were checking out early and they were telling on them if they did, and they end up going back on some of these.
Yeah, well, and also because this was something that that like the really hardcore conservatives in the state always hated it, because for the Republican Party, the state bureaucracy in which so many of them have worked, ironically,
yeah.
is this giant enemy, right? This giant enemy. And so they just, I mean, I think they hated to see any kind of consideration for state employees. They just, oh, they grind their teeth every time this comes up. Every time the state employees come up in some way that it's got to be considered other than how many of them can we fire? And so, because what you saw is once Governor Herbert came in, what did he do? Immediately end it.
Killed
because
it. Yeah, yeah.
That was always kind of Governor Herbert's thing is when he, in the election for Huntsman, when Huntsman became governor, Herbert was there to keep the radical right wing in line, right? He was a Utah County commissioner known as hardcore anti. And so when he became governor, that was, I think, one of the concessions he made to the radicals is, okay, we're going to go back to thinking that state employees are just terrible people and we're going to just end this for them. And then, you know, he wound up changing and his staff, Governor Herbert's staff, wound up pushing him into a very moderate and in some ways liberal administration.
Well, but see, here's the thing. So what they're getting right on this is they go, we're working toward a 4-day work week. 32 hours.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about a 4-day work week still trying to figure out how to jam 40 hours in.
You know, I'm so glad you brought this up because I think that Spain here is on the vanguard of something.
It's not. We already figured it out.
No, but here's the thing. This is going to go even further. I read this interesting article. Now, you and I aren't going to live to see this, but the article pointed this out. He said, we went from, you know, more than half of the humans on the planet were involved in agriculture, right? And that wasn't very far ago, long ago. It was like 100 years ago.
Yeah.
More than half of the humans were involved in agriculture. Today, at least here in the United States, it's like 3% or something paltry that's involved in agriculture.
Did you
but
say
our agriculture output is still enormous. Mm-hmm. We just need fewer people. And this guy said, this is what's going to happen to work, period. He said, there's going to reach a point where our great-great-grandkids are going to learn about our lives and they're going to say, wow, that guy had a full-time job. How crazy. Kind of like thinking back to your great-grandfather. Wow, that guy.
He worked 7 days a week.
That guy raised cows.
Right.
Wow, that's crazy. There's basically, we're going to get to the point where there's just not going to be a ton of quote-unquote work to do. And for the most part, humans will retire from full-time employment as a species.
Yeah, and I think that – and people are nervous because they think that, that's what the hipsters want. And we know what the hipsters
they
are.
They say that's what the communists want.
It's what the hipsters want, and the hipsters that equate to new communism are a bunch of lazy bums, right? The reality is it's a bunch of people who already worked 40-hour work weeks who now won't be able to not work the 40-hour work weeks. They won't be able to get that time back. So they have to do the back in my day it was hard kind of a deal, right? Kind mm-hmm. of a 40-hour work week is going to be equivalent to an uphill two ways kind of deal. I mean, the reality is this. So mm-hmm. really break down how many hours you work a week like at your office.
Like actual productive work?
Yeah. I'm saying even like for me, when we used to come in a lot earlier and we get a lot more stuff done while here at the office, they've asked us to cut down the time that we're actually like, hey, when do you actually need to be at the office? You know what I mean? Like, and so for us to do show prep, like I come in and it used to be coming in at 2 or 3, and instead I'll come in at 4, right? So we'll start prepping at 4, and our show starts at 7. And so then I walk out the door, and it's basically 5 hours at the station every day. But I'm at the station for those 5 hours. Now, there are other things. Like here's the other negative part of it. I'm also on the hook to be in these, you know, meetings that are going on during the rest of the regular workday. You know, people who are like having that 11 a.m. meeting, people who work 9-to-5 type shifts, or at least wink, pretend to work 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. I have to sit in on those sometimes, listen in, participate, pretend like I'm participating. And so it's not I don't think anybody's asking anyone to do 40 hours a week anymore. Unless it's, you know, what do you think the ones, except for like in retail where it's like the punch in, punch out hourly situation. I think that's pretty easy. We've already made this this transition. We've already told ourselves, and this is a perfect time to do it. When we start getting back into the quote-unquote regular times, we're back from COVID, you know, in the next 6 months or 8 months mm-hmm. or whatever. Does it look like it's going to look totally different? They're doing so many surveys at our office, Ethan, about how could you, could you keep working this way with you working from home, blah, blah, blah. There are going to be a lot of people who don't show back up to work, and they'll still be on the payroll working from home.
Does Kevin know you don't work 40 hours?
Kevin's not my boss, man.
What? Kevin's not your boss anymore?
No. Look, they know I don't. Here's the deal.
But he is the at least in some ways, he's the boss of the Nightside Project podcast, right?
Okay. But I'm just saying this. No, and I don't feel bad for only being at the station 5 hours a day. Because there are a lot of people who are, that's assuming that I walk right in at 4 and leave right when our show ends at 9, which is not necessarily the case. But
yeah.
I don't have any problem. How many years did I work Saturdays on top of the 5 days a week we worked at Nightside? And we did. We felt guilty if it was like, oh, 2 to 10. Oof, barely got in that 8 hours or whatever. I don't know. Gone should be the times of you feeling guilty like it had nothing to do with whether or not you got your work done, but whether or not you were at your desk exactly on time. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So Spain's figuring it out. New Zealand, Germany, they've already kind of gone that direction already. But I don't know. Could you get your job done in 32 hours during the week? Abso-freaking-lutely. Ethan, you and I have talked about how much we hate like the set hour lunch break.
Yeah.
You know, like mm-hmm. in an office setting, the hour lunch break is like a big deal for people to be like, oh, good. It takes me 13 minutes to walk to the place and get the food. And then we come back and then I have 46 more minutes for me to be able to just not do anything. And then it just is that's never been important to me. I'm like, I don't need to eat and then finally get back on the clock again. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
No, I agree.
What are you on, the toilet? What's going on?
No. Okay. No, I'm not on the toilet. Why, anyway, does it sound like it?
No, it's fine. I was just wondering if you had any thoughts about it. What, do you work 8-hour days? Do you work 5 8-hour days?
I think, yeah, for the most part. But I agree with you on the lunch hour. Sometimes, you know, the 1 hour for lunch, the set 1 hour for lunch is crazy. Sometimes you need 3
mm.
or 4.
Yeah, no, for sure. You got those clients. They love those Tucano's buffets.
And you know what? Sometimes, and people in sales understand this, mm-hmm. sometimes you go for lunch. And then, you know, you just go back to the office and say, hey, I've got some client visits I need to make.
No, that's what I'm saying is like, dude, the sales floor here is totally empty.
Well,
and,
yeah,
and guess
working,
what they're doing?
They're from home.
And guess what they're doing? They're still selling. So
I'm in touch with the sales floor every week.
How many times have we been? How many times have we watched people? And they're like, oh, well, I didn't see you at your desk. And these people are like in their 40s, you know? So it's like, I didn't see you at your desk. I'm going, listen, let these salespeople do their sales gig somewhere else. You know, yeah. Let them do it. They can do it from home. Come on, I don't need to see them doing it. I don't need to look over and go, good, you're here. Now I can rest at ease. It doesn't mean you're actually getting any work done.
Boy, you can say that again.
Anyway.
Look, I can sleep at my desk just as easy as I can sleep at home.
I wish I could sleep. You know how these studios are. They have all these windows all around.
Yeah.
Everyone would see. I'd basically be on display with my mouth open asleep in the studio.
So this is what you do, though. Here's the thing. So you put your mask on. Look, I told you this. Mask and sunglasses.
With the glasses. I would still be mouth open. Well, I guess the mask on.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, man.
But
the freaking
I would be
mask.
Tipped back in my. I'd be tipped back in the chair.
And then turn the microphone on so that the recording light comes on so no one comes in. Says on air.
It'd be weird because they would see the CPAP machine that I brought to work to nap with underneath the mask.
Tell them you've got COVID. It's oxygen, supplemental oxygen. Don't come in here. I'm recording and there's COVID. No one come in here.
Can you imagine getting on the elevator and your boss is like, hey, what's going on, Ethan? What do you have there? A CPAP machine? What's it for? I'm just going to clean it out. You guys have really hot water here. No, nothing. I was going to show one of the janitors the seal I have on the mask here. He's working on his there. All right, Miller.
I got a Zen headline for
you.
Us.
Do? Oh,
yeah, man.
Guess
you
what?
Hear?
I got the music.
Okay.
There you go.
So this is from SF Gate. This is a story. It's actually a little bit of history, American history. Andrew Chamings put together this story of San Francisco's famous lost tourist. And I'm just going to kind of paraphrase a couple of parts out of here. This happened in 1979. Erwin Krutz is a 49-year-old German brewery worker, and he'd always wanted to see San Francisco. Always wanted to see San Francisco. Saved up his money, basically blew his life savings on a round-trip, once-in-a-lifetime birthday vacation to San Francisco. He'd seen it on TV. He couldn't wait. Well, this man, who typically enjoyed drinking 17 beers a day,
according
to his own.
Jeez.
I know.
17 beers a day?
Yeah. Jeez. So
this guy did not work 8-hour days, by the way.
No. So the flight had one stop in Bangor, Maine. And they were on Bangor, Maine, and the flight attendant that he'd gotten to know was jumping off there. Her shift was ending. She was leaving the plane. And on her way out, she told him to have a nice time in San Francisco. Well, in his, you know, half awake stupor, he thought, oh my gosh, we're here, grabbed his suitcase, got off the plane, went through customs, jumped in the cab, and asked the driver to take him to the city.
Wow.
He wandered around Bangor, Maine for 3 days. Enjoying the sights and sounds, he thought he was in San Francisco.
No.
Yeah.
This poor guy.
It was finally discovered what the problem was. Within a week, he became an international celebrity.
He had 17 beers on the plane. That was the problem.
He was made an international celebrity. He was on the Today Show and interviewed by Time Magazine. And he wound up being gifted a plot of land. I want to say like a... I can't remember how big it was. He wound up being gifted a piece of land just outside of Bangor, Maine, and San Francisco paid to have him extend his vacation and fly out to San Francisco, where he was awarded the key to the city and became a general folk hero. Can you believe that?
How long ago was this?
This is in 1977.
So how are we finding out about this now?
Oh, it was people knew about it. It's just one of those things that was big then and everyone's forgotten about it because
I love the idea of they shoehorn into the story that he had the tendency to drink about 17 beers a day. And then I don't know how he got off the plane early. Like, come on. You know, that guy was.
He did it. He decided after 3 days, he decided that he must be in a suburb of San Francisco, right? He's like, well, obviously this is in the city. So he hailed a taxi and asked the driver to take him to downtown San Francisco.
He's like, why is the ocean on the right here, not on the left? What's going on here?
So isn't that amazing? Now, here's the cool thing. Oh, he also...
That's pre-internet stuff. Those are pre-internet problems. You can't.
That's why
he
was on the Today Show.
That's amazing.
Right? That's how this became. So he was made an honorary member of the Penobscot Indian Nation. He had a folk song written about him. He was thrown a 50th birthday party that was attended by the governor of Maine. And This is what it is. He was gifted an acre of scrubland in northern Maine as an act of goodwill. Now, here's the deal, and I loved this so much, is that every year, the county clerk up there...
He goes and mows it? Oh.
No. The county clerk reports that every year he gets a check for... He sends a bill for the property taxes for that acre and gets a check. So apparently that guy's been paying taxes on that the whole time.
Hilarious.
He doesn't have any plans for it, but he just doesn't want to lose it. He appreciates it so much. So he's just been paying taxes every year on that acre of property.
It's a great move by Bangor, Maine, where they go, dude, we're going to gift this to you. By the way, you're never going to live here, and we're going to get $3,500 from you a year. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what an acre of land outside of Bangor, Maine, would be tax wise. Anyway, well,
yeah,
good for him. Good for him. Good for you. Good for you.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's also really sad. I mean, I'm glad he got to do that. I'm glad he got to actually go and. Which one do you think he liked more? I mean, it sounds like they gave him more gifts in Bangor, Maine.
Yeah, I think he appreciated seeing San Francisco, and obviously was a celebrity there. But I think he really connected to Bangor, Maine.
Yeah.
So.
All right, Ethan, great talking to you, buddy.
Hey, thanks,
man. Another edition of the show. We'll do this again later this week. Hey, while your NCAA brackets are getting filled out, and then you see, send us your most ridiculous brackets that people are having you fill out. KSL.com has a most ridiculous bracket on the best takeout restaurants in Salt Lake City. A bracket. Yes. So send us your most ridiculous brackets. We'll try to play along this week. For Ethan Miller, I'm Alex Keery. See you on the Nightside Project podcast another time.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.